Welcome to Hour 1 of today's Arizona Republic. I'm your volunteer reader, Neil Kelly. In this hour, we'll be reading headlines from the Valley and the State and USA Today. Our first local news article is titled, Phoenix Sky Harbor Gets a New Flight to This Beachy Weekend Spot. Where and How Much? By Michael Salerno, Arizona Republic. Arizonans will have another way to fly to a popular weekend spot this summer. Alaska Airlines announced it will begin nonstop flights between Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport and San Diego, the Pacific Coast city abundant in beaches and cultural activities. Alaska has been making adjustments to its flight schedule in the months since it completed a merger with Hawaiian Airlines. The Phoenix-San Diego route is part of Alaska Airlines' service expansion at San Diego International Airport, with a 30% increase in flights and three new routes. Besides Phoenix, Alaska will begin flying to Chicago and Denver from San Diego. Here's what to know about the new flights to San Diego. When will Alaska Airlines begin Phoenix Sky Harbor flights to San Diego? Alaska Airlines' new Phoenix-San Diego flights will begin taking off on August 20th. When the route launches, Alaska Airlines will become the fourth airline to fly nonstop from Phoenix to San Diego. American Airlines, Southwest Airlines, and Frontier Airlines also offer the route. Alaska last added new flights in Arizona when it launched a route to Sacramento via Tucson International Airport. How much does Alaska Airlines Phoenix to San Diego flight cost? Flights start at $79 one way, with Alaska's lowest-priced saver fare. Be aware that this fare carries more restrictions. For example, passengers can't pick their own seats, and they're the last to board and access the overhead bins. Alaska's main fare class offers more flexibility and benefits than the saver class. It starts at $109 one way, just $30 more. San Diego is a popular getaway spot for Arizonans because it's one of the closest U.S. cities with a beach from Phoenix. It's a little more than a one-hour flying distance or about a five-and-a-half-hour drive. La Jolla Cove and Mission Beach are among the top spots for swimming, surfing, sunsets, and spotting wildlife like sea lions and dolphins. SeaWorld's San Diego Park was ranked among the top 10 most popular theme parks with Arizonans last year. The San Diego Zoo, the top-rated U.S. zoo or aquarium among TripAdvisor users, is home to more than 12,000 animals representing 680 species. In August 2024, the zoo welcomed the arrival of the first giant pandas to enter the U.S. in 21 years. Other highlights of San Diego include the historic naval aircraft USS Midway, the museums and gardens of Balboa Park, and California's first European settlement in Old Town San Diego. The next article is titled, Metro Phoenix Home Building Slowed in March. Here's Why, by Catherine Rigor, Arizona Republic. Home building in Metro Phoenix fell in March as tariffs that would boost construction costs loomed. But new home sales stayed pretty steady as mortgage rates dipped. In March, home builders were issued 1,890 permits to construct Phoenix area houses, down 20% from 2,367 permits in March 2024, according to R.L. Brown Housing Report's latest research. Valley new home sales totaled 2,110 last month, compared to 2,135 in March 2024. There is quite a bit of anxiety lurking about the tariff issue, said Jim Daniel, president of the housing research firm. I don't think anyone has a correct answer on the future impact on new home construction. Higher tariffs on construction materials were set to go into effect in early April and push up the costs of building and buying homes, but President Donald Trump paused his proposed tariffs for 90 days on April 9th. The proposed additional taxes on aluminum and lumber could add $7,500 to $10,000 to the cost of building a new house, according to the National Association of Home Builders. Higher Valley development fees will also increase the cost of a new house by tens of thousands of dollars. The median price of a new Metro Phoenix house was $489,207 in March, which was about $35,000 higher than the price for an existing home. The new home median was down after climbing above $505,000 in January, but still up by almost $20,000 from March 2024. To avoid future tariff costs, Ken Peterson, Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Shea Homes, Arizona, said many of the Valley's big home builders have houses nearly built that buyers can purchase now. Builders were bullish on the market in 2024, and that puts us on better ground now for any uncertainty ahead, he said. Metro Phoenix ranked number 5 nationally for the most new home starts in late 2024, according to housing research firm Zonda. Many Valley home builders are offering concessions, including mortgage rate buy-downs that have been helping draw buyers. The average 30-year mortgage rate inched up to 6.83% last week from 6.62% the week before, according to Freddie Mac. That rate was hovering around 7% in January. The next article is titled, Metro Phoenix Restaurant Named Second Most Family-Friendly Restaurant in America, by Meredith G. White, Arizona Republic. Taking kids out to a restaurant can sometimes become the dining Olympics as you find yourself juggling, keeping tiny tots occupied, answering a million questions, and trying to get everyone ordered and eating without a spectacle. Luckily, Yelp came out with a list of the top family-friendly restaurants across the U.S., and 6 Arizona eateries made the cut, with one in Gilbert Restaurant making it to the number 2 spot overall. The restaurants that made list exhibit qualities like having a welcoming atmosphere for the entire family, understanding the needs of young diners, providing amenities like high chairs, booster seats, and kids' menus, among other family-friendly extras. Here's a look at the 6 Arizona restaurants that made Yelp's top family-friendly restaurants of the 2025 list. Joe's Farm Grill ranked number 2 in the country. Located on a farm from 1966, Joe's has a massive tree-shaded grassy area to play and roam. And while the grown-ups can sit at large picnic tables, small children have the option of a picnic table their own size. The menu has all-natural beef burgers, and most of the produce is grown either in Gilbert or elsewhere in Arizona. Plus, ingredients that are zero trans fat, so parents can feel good about what their kids are eating. The rest of the menu includes loaded fries, sandwiches, milkshakes, fresh-baked cookies, and 8 different burger options. Reviewers comment, Stephanie F. wrote, "Awesome experience, amazing food, and fun vibes. Would highly recommend and visit again." Details, 3000 East Ray Road, Building 1, Gilbert, 480-563-4745, joesfarmgrill.com. Joe's Real Barbecue ranked number 36. Joe's not only provides killer barbecue, but also a fun atmosphere in an outdoor area where adults can socialize while kids can stay entertained with cornhole or run around and play. The menu is comprised of classic fare with dry rubbed and slow cooked meats and side dishes like mac and cheese, barbecue pit beans, cheesy potatoes, and desserts like peach cobbler and lemon cake, which are all made in-house. Rating 4.0 from 31,800 viewers. Reviewers comment. Jessica S. wrote, "Wow, this place did not disappoint. We brought a large group here a couple of weeks ago. I'm talking like 25 people, and everyone loved it. The line can be intimidating, but it moved fairly quickly." Details, 301 North Gilbert Road, Gilbert, 480-503-3805. Lucy's at the Orchard, ranked number 43. If you're looking for a day out with your little one, Lucy's is the place to go. More than just a fun place to eat, Lucy's at the Orchard also has a marketplace where kids can look at toys and games, while parents can shop for candles, artisan soaps, and gourmet food. The menu consists of power bowls and salads, burgers and sandwiches, breakfast options like frittatas, burritos, and biscuits and gravy, plus signature fresh squeezed juices, coffee, and smoothies. Rating, 4.0 from 900 viewers. Reviewers comment, Kristen T. wrote, "This spot is awesome. I've come a few times, and here are the reasons I'll return. The convenience of walking up to order, quick service, fresh juice, strong cold brew, dog-friendly patio, fun place to bring guests or meet friends." Details, 7100 North 12th Street, Building 2, Phoenix, 602-633-2442, lucisgoodness.com. Bubba's 33, ranked number 52. Bubba's 33 has a fun vibe with a friendly waitstaff, loud music, TV screens throughout the restaurant, and outdoor areas out front and on the patio where kids can play. You'll find classic and unique burgers on the menu, along with pizzas, wings, sandwiches, pastas, salads, and plates like fish and chips, salmon, steak, and southern fried chicken. Rating, 4.3 from 1,100 viewers. Reviewers comment. Rodney S. wrote, "Bubba's is always a family favorite. Food's consistent and the staff friendly. Obviously, if the food wasn't excellent, it wouldn't be in the family rotation." Details, 16100 North Arrowhead Fountain Center Drive, Peoria, 623 412-9933, bubbas33.com. Fat Olives ranked number 35. This classic Italian restaurant has been featured on Guy Fieri's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and diners report that it oozes a family-friendly ambiance, and the waitstaff are more than accommodating to kiddos, providing crayons, coloring sheets, and pizza dough for them to play with. The pizza oven was handcrafted in Italy. Their mozzarella and burrata is handmade every day, and Fat Olives strives to provide patrons with a real Neapolitan pizza experience. There's more than pizza on the menu. Diners can also indulge in pastas, salads, and desserts. Rating 4.4 from 2,500 reviews. Reviewers' comments. Katie wrote, "The food is amazing. The staff are so friendly and super kind to our daughter, and the service was very fast. We loved the ambiance of watching them make the pizza at the bar. Super cool." Details 2308 East Route 66, Flagstaff. 928-853-0056. FATOLIVES, flagstaff.com. The House, ranked number 79. It's not just kids who will feel welcome at the House in Show Low, but pups too. Adults, kids, and dogs all have special menus. Between the outdoor seating with grass to run around, games set up to play, and an ice cream shop on the premises, it's a kid's paradise. The menu has a variety of options from big salads to 8 different kinds of burgers, along with sandwiches, fries, a green chili macaroni salad, and more. Rating 4.5 from 822 reviews. Reviewers comment. John H. wrote, "If you're ever in Show Low, don't pass this opportunity up. You gotta check it out." Details 1191 East Hall Street, Show Low. 928-537-9273. TheHouseSholo.com. The next article is titled "Downtown Phoenix $117 Million Apartment Project to Preserve Historic Building" by Karina Vanek, Arizona Republic. A planned $117 million development in the southern part of downtown Phoenix will include restoring a historic building and reusing it as commercial space. Colorado-based developer Ardex received approval from the Phoenix City Council in early April to develop a 14-story, 262-unit apartment complex on about 2 acres of land near First Avenue and Jackson Street. The site includes 2 vacant buildings, one that is historically significant and was most recently used for court purposes, said Zandon Keating, Deputy Director of Community and Economic Development for Phoenix, at a meeting of the Economic Development and Housing Subcommittee in late March. The other building on the site is not historically significant, and the site also includes a surface parking lot. The project would include demolishing the building that is not historic and building on that portion and the parking lot and rehabilitating the historic building. The rehabilitation would include restoring the exterior of the building and adapting it for commercial use, like retail or a restaurant. The building, called the Pratt Gilbert Building, is more than 100 years old, constructed in 1913, and was most recently used by courts. It was added to Phoenix's Historic Property Register in 2001. It is historically significant because of its age and quality of the building. As part of the agreement, the city approved a 25-year incentive called a Government Property Lease Excise Tax, or GPLET. The arrangement allows a developer to deed the land back to the city in exchange for tax breaks on the site. According to the agreement, the developer will still make payments to the city and other taxing jurisdictions, like school districts, in the form of a minimum payment that is determined by a third party. Over the course of the lease term, the developer will pay $643,750 to the city for the rent on the land. The developer will also pay the equivalent of the city's share of property taxes to Phoenix's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Next, we have a sports story about the Phoenix Suns. It's titled, "Who Will Phoenix Suns Pick in First Round? Here's Where They'll Draft in 2025. By Dwayne Rankin, Arizona Republic. The Phoenix Suns have the 29th overall pick in the first round and the 52nd pick in the second round of the 2025 draft, June 25th to 26th, at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. The NBA announced the draft order selection on Monday, April 21st, after determining 5 tiebreakers through random drawings conducted by NBA President of League Operations Byron Spruill at the league office in Secaucus, New Jersey. Mark Dielli, a partner from Ernst & Young, an accounting firm, oversaw the tiebreaker process. Phoenix was in a similar position last year and landed eventual rotational players Ryan Dunn and Oso Igodaro in draft day trades. So who might they land this year? CBS Sports projects the Suns will draft LeBaron Fillon in the first round this year. A 6'4 freshman point guard out of Alabama, Fillon averaged 10.6 points on 45.2% shooting, 31.5% from three. He led the Crimson Tide, 28-9, in steals with 50 and was assisted second in assists with 140 to 64 turnovers. Sports Illustrated has Phoenix using its first-round pick to take Michigan junior 7-footer Danny Wolfe in the first round and nabbing Darian Williams in the second round. Wolfe averaged 13.2 points on 49.7% shooting and 9.7 rebounds in his one season with the Wolverines, 27-10, after spending 2 years at Yale. Williams averaged a career-high 15.1 points in his second season at Texas Tech, 28-9, after starting his college career at Nevada in 2023. The 6'6 forward entered the draft as well as the transfer portal in maintaining his NCAA eligibility. Last season, the Suns chose Daron Holmes II with the 22nd overall pick in the first round and traded his draft rights to Denver for the draft rights of Dunn, who the Nuggets took 28th overall, and 3 second-round picks, 2024, 2026, and 2031. The next day, they acquired the draft rights to Igodaro, the 40th overall pick in the second round from the New York Knicks, in exchange for the draft rights to Kevin McCullough, Jr., the 56th overall pick, and the Boston Celtics' 2028 protected second-round pick. Dunn started 44 of the 74 games he played in this season, averaging 6.9 points and 3.6 rebounds, while Igodaro averaged 4.2 points and 3.6 rebounds in 61 games, 6 starts, this season. The 6'8 Dunn took on the challenge of being the team's top on-ball defender, and the 6'10 Igodaro displayed budding skills as a passer, on screens, and finishing around the rim. He shot 60.4% from the field. Igodaro spent 4 years at Marquette. Dunn played at Virginia for 2 years. Phoenix's 29th pick this year came from a deal before the 2025 trade deadline. The Suns sent their unprotected 2031 first-round pick to Utah for the least favorable first-round picks between the Cleveland Cavaliers, Minnesota Timberwolves, and Jazz in 2025, 2027, and 2029. The Cavs wound up being the least favorable as they finished with the NBA's second-best record at 64-18 to have the 29th pick, which now belongs to Phoenix. Phoenix acquired the 52nd pick in the second round from Charlotte in the Nick Richards deal before the trade deadline that sent Josh Okogie to the Hornets. Houston's lottery pick is from Brooklyn's first-round selection the Nets received from Phoenix in the Kevin Durant trade before the 2023 deadline. Washington's second-round selection is from the Bradley Beal deal involving Chris Paul in the summer of 2023. The Suns failed to make the playoffs in the 2024-25 season, finished 36-46, marking their first losing season since 2019-20. The last time they missed this postseason, they fired Mike Budenholzer the day after their final game, April 13th at Sacramento. Budenholzer only coached the Suns one season after signing a 5-year deal for more than $50 million. Phoenix will hire its fourth head coach in 4 seasons under team owner Matt Ishbia. The next article is titled, Bojangles' First Arizona Location Will Open in This Metro Phoenix City. Here's Where, by Rhea Lee, Arizona Republic. The very first Arizona location of popular Southern fried chicken chain Bojangles will open in Gilbert, according to media reports. The North Carolina-based restaurant acquired a property at the northeast corner of Val Vista Drive and Mercy Road, ABC 15 reported. The opening date for the new location has not yet been announced. Bojangles, which is known for its Cajun-styled fried chicken meals, biscuits, and sweet tea, first announced its expansion to the Valley in March 2024. There are 20 restaurants planned for Metro Phoenix, of which the Gilbert location is the first. "We know guests in Phoenix are going to love the southern flavor of Bojangles' food and hospitality," said Bojangles' Chief Development Officer Jim Cannon in the 2024 press release announcing the expansion. The next article is titled, Grace, Compassion, and Humility. Arizona Political Spiritual Leaders Mourn Pope Francis, by Haley Evans, Arizona Republic. Arizonans described Pope Francis as a compassionate leader whose focus on the marginalized reshaped the Catholic Church and resonated far beyond its walls. His death, April 21st, at age 88, due to stroke and heart failure, followed weeks of hospitalization for double pneumonia and kidney failure. Francis led the Catholic Church for more than a decade. His death came just one day after his final public appearance on Easter Sunday in St. Peter's Square. He was the first Jesuit and first Latin American pontiff born in Buenos Aires, Argentina. His death prompted reflections from political and spiritual leaders across Arizona. Here are some of their remembrances. Representative Juan Giscomane. This morning, Laura and I mourn the passing of Pope Francis. We join alongside millions around the world in prayer as we commend his soul to the Lord. May he rest in peace. Phoenix Bishop John Dolan. With deep sorrow, yet with enduring hope in the resurrection, we mourn the passing of our Holy Father, Pope Francis. He was a man who listened, truly listened, not only to the faithful within the Church, but to people of all faiths and goodwill. Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego. I want to offer my deep condolences to Arizona's Catholic community, nearly 2 million strong. Pope Francis was more than the head of the Catholic Church. He was a lifelong, unwavering advocate for human rights and an exemplary example of how to use one's life to do good. We are a better people because of his works and deeds. U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego. Sidney and I had the honor of meeting Pope Francis. His grace, compassion, and humility left a mark on both of us. May he rest in peace and may his legacy of service live on. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs. I join Catholics across Arizona and the world in mourning the death of Pope Francis. He led the Church with humility and dignity and was a voice for those who too often have none. We can all learn from his message of compassion and empathy for the least among us. U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. Pope Francis's compassion and humility was an inspiration for Christians everywhere, and he never shied away from using his voice to speak up for those in need. As a Catholic, I took that as an example to follow, and I still do. May he rest in peace. S.S. Simon and Jude Cathedral. With heavy hearts, we bid farewell to His Holiness Pope Francis, a shepherd of the Church whose devotion and leadership inspired millions across the globe. His unwavering faith, commitment to peace, and tireless service to humanity will never be forgotten. St. Mary's Basilica. May our Holy Father rest in eternal peace. With great sadness, we enter into this period of mourning for our beloved Pope Francis, yet we do so full of resurrection, hope, and joy. The next article is titled, Peoria Community Going Up for Homebuyers 55 and Older with Houses Priced in the Low $500,000, by Catherine Rieger, Arizona Republic. A new resort-style community for buyers 55 and older called Ridgecrest is going up in Peoria. The 414-home community is in the Vistancia development, located between the Carefree Highway and the Loop 3303. Model homes are open for tours. It's Shea Homes' first Trilogy boutique community, and home prices start in the low $500,000. About 500 people showed up at its grand opening last week. Interest in Ridgecrest has been strong, said Hal Looney, area president of Shea's Arizona Activity Lifestyle Division. Now that our beautiful model homes will be open for tours, buyers can see how the floor plans fit their lifestyle, where their furniture will go, and truly imagine living their best life here. The West Valley is dominating home building in Metro Phoenix. The West Valley will continue to dominate the region in population, growth, and new single and multifamily housing of all types, said Greg Vogel, CEO of Land Advisors Organization. He said home prices are climbing in the West Valley with the major employers it has drawn, including the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. The number of West Valley home sales priced above $800,000 jumped 112% in 2024 from 2023, according to Vogel. Ridgecrest has 10 contemporary home designs that range from 1,649 to 3,040 square feet. Ridgecrest will also have a wellness social club with a fitness wing, recovery area, outdoor event and fitness lawns, a pool with lap lanes, 4 pickleball courts, and a trailhead connecting the community's walking paths. The next article is titled, The Ice Bucket Challenge is Making a Comeback. Here's What to Know About 2025 Version, by Lori Comstock and Shelby Slade, Arizona Republic. People are doing the Ice Bucket Challenge again, but this time people are taking the cold plunge to raise money for a new cause. The 2014 Viral Challenge has returned, brought back by students from the University of Southern Carolina, seeking to raise awareness for mental health. During the original challenge, everyone, and I mean everyone, from celebrities and athletes to your local teachers and neighbors, dumped buckets of ice water on their heads and dared others to do the same while raising money for progressive neurodegenerative disease, ALS. Here's everything to know about the Ice Bucket Challenge, including how it started, the cause it's raising money for, and who has participated. What is the Ice Bucket Challenge? The Ice Bucket Challenge was a viral fundraising campaign that raised millions for ALS research in 2014. It has been reimagined by students at the University of South Carolina, now with a focus on mental health awareness. Participants, as they did in 2014, pour ice water over themselves, post the videos, and nominate others to join, all to raise awareness and spread education about mental health. How did the USC Ice Bucket Challenge start? Students at the University of South Carolina's Mental Health Needs Discussion, MIND, Club, launched the Speak Your Mind campaign on Instagram in March. This year's challenge raises funds for Active Minds, a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit with a mission to empower youth and young adults and to change the stigma around mental health. Wade Jefferson, a junior at USC, founded the MIND Club after his friends died by suicide, according to NBC News. At the time of writing, the campaign has raised over $242,000, with participation from high-profile people including today's Jenna Bush Hager, who nominated celebrities Blake Shelton and Scarlett Johansson, and actor Matt Bomer. What are the Ice Bucket Challenge rules? Donations, rules. The rules of the 2025 Ice Bucket Challenge are listed on the USC's MIND official instructions and include how to nominate the next participant after you are nominated. Nominate 2 to 5 people to join by tagging them in your videos. Make a donation through the Active Minds and Speak Your Mind fundraising page. Share your video using the hashtag #SpeakYourMind and tag USCMind. Educate yourself and others by following @USCMind, @active_minds, and visit activeminds.org. ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. When did the Ice Bucket Challenge start? The original Ice Bucket Challenge took place during summer 2014 and encouraged people to pour a bucket of ice water over their head or have someone else dump it on them to spread education, awareness, and raise funds for ALS. It began when professional golfer Chris Kennedy challenged his cousin, Jeanette Sinercia, to take part in the Ice Bucket Challenge to honor her husband, Anthony Sinercia, according to ALS Association website. Anthony Sinercia died in 2017 at the age of 46. You are listening to Hour 1 of today's Arizona Republic. I'm Neil Kelly, and we'll continue with the news. The next article is titled, What Work Are They Doing to Harry Bonsall Park North in Glendale? By Sean Raimundo, Arizona Republic. Description: Glendale is working to improve the northern half of Harry Bonsall Park, home to the city's F-100D Super Sabre Air Force jet display. More than a century ago, the area was home to a government poultry farm that the U.S. Department of Agriculture operated, according to the Glendale, Arizona Historical Society. Residents then dubbed it Chicken Park, and the local nickname stuck. The 10-acre community park has been closed since early January. It's set to see a host of new upgrades the city is making to address aging facilities and accommodate increasing demand and use. Improvements are being made to the site's irrigation, lighting, and F-100 display. The city is also resurfacing the existing sports courts, namely the basketball, pickleball, and volleyball courts. The racquetball, roller hockey, and 2 tennis courts are being removed and replaced with additional basketball courts and a type of soccer field called a mini pitch. Additionally, the project will improve the park's connectivity to the surrounding area and bring back tree-lined pathways, filling in effort to restore Bonsall's historic appeal. History. City leaders approved the $1.74 million improvement project as part of Glendale Parks and Recreation Master Plan in May 2021. While drafting the master plan, the city surveyed residents whose top priority for Harry Bonsall Park was to improve what is currently offered and allocating resources to improve park amenities. When will the work be done? The park improvements are expected to be finished by January 2026, according to the city. Our next article is titled, Phoenix Summer Heat is Horrible for Cars. What to Check Before You Hit the Road? By Shelby Slade, Arizona Republic. Arizona's summer heat is tough on everything, people, plants, and pets especially. But what about your vehicle? The extreme heat can take a major toll on your vehicle, said AAA spokesperson Julian Paredes. Spring is a great time to get regular maintenance on your car done. If you've kind of neglected your car, you really want to get it checked out before summertime, Paredes said. There are three essential car checkups you should be doing this spring: battery, tires, and air conditioner, to ensure it's smooth sailing when you take your summer road trips or are just running your daily errands. Here's everything Arizonans need to check out on their vehicle before summer hits to avoid any breakdowns and unplanned car expenses. Check your car battery. The biggest thing for Arizona is to check your car battery, Paredes said. Summer is extra tough on car batteries, cutting a typical battery's 5-year lifespan to just 3 years. As the temperatures creep up, the engine compartment of your vehicle can get even hotter, essentially baking your car battery. While this happens, the materials inside your battery can evaporate, compromising the battery structure and increasing corrosion, according to battery company Schumacher Electric. The heat can also cause the battery to discharge faster by speeding up the battery's chemical reactions. Car batteries are the biggest reason why people call AAA across country, but especially in Arizona, Paredes said. The heat really lowers the service life of your battery. Pay attention to your tires. Your tires really suffer during the heat, Paredes said. Firestone Complete Auto Care says that even though tires won't melt in the heat, your tires are still at risk. Every 10-degree increase in temperature can cause your tires to gain 1 pound per square inch of pressure. This means that tires that are underinflated in the summer may not trigger the warning light and potentially blow out before you know there's an issue. Keep your car's AC running cool. Paredes said AAA sees a spike in AC service calls each summer. He recommended having a professional check your car's air conditioning system to ensure it keeps blowing cool air all summer long. This is the time when you really want to check the AC and test it, he said. The last thing you want is to go on your summer road trip in 100-degree heat and have your AC go out. A few other things you can do to help your AC this summer, according to a car insurance company, The General. Keep your car clean. Dirt, dust, and pet hair can cause all air conditioner problems. Regularly charge AC filter. Whether this is something you change yourself or have a professional look at, it's important to change the filter regularly. Park in the shade. Your AC has to work less when you keep your car cooler by parking in shadier places. Using window shades can also help with this. Don't pre-cool your vehicle. In colder climates, people may run their car heater to warm up the vehicle before getting inside. However, this advice doesn't make sense for hotter weather. Your AC unit works best when the car is in motion, not idling on your driveway. To rapidly cool your car, you can open all your car windows for a minute while running the AC to force the hot air out of the vehicle. The next article is titled Mass Held for Pope for the People, Pope Francis, at St. Mary's Basilica in Phoenix, by Jose R. Gonzalez, Arizona Republic. Jeff Scobie was among the faithful gathered the evening of April 22nd to pray over the soul of Pope Francis as the day's last sun rays shone through the stained glass windows of St. Mary's Basilica in downtown Phoenix. There was something different about this pope, the 53-year-old Phoenix resident observed. The 88-year-old pontiff died April 21st, just hours after Easter Sunday, following a stroke and irreversible heart failure, the Vatican said. He was sort of a pope for the people. He seemed to be a humble man, Scobie said as he stood for just outside the doors to the basilica. Pope Francis lived out his humility even in his last moments. The Vatican said he died at Casa Santa Marta, a guest house he took up residence at throughout his papacy, after shunning the official pontiff residence at the Apostolic Palace. A soft aroma of incense permeated St. Mary's, whose walls still displayed Easter lilies from Holy Week. People, mostly clad in black, marshaled quietly into the church ahead of the Requiem. This Mass for the departed was punctuated by the tolling of bells right before its beginning and followed by the church's organ playing with cantor Carlos Elias Barraza, Torvino, breaking into song. A baby's yell echoed across as attendees awaited the Reverend John Muir's homily. St. Mary's pastor noted how the Pope often looked solemn when in the company of the powerful and wealthy during his 12-year pontificate. The happier he was usually meant he was with the people who the world had forgotten, Muir said, pointing to Pope Francis' outreach to migrants and the homeless. Muir referenced a July 2013 moment in which the Pope addressed a hotly debated issue within the Catholic faith. "We all remember when he said in his famous airplane interviews, 'Who am I to judge?'" Muir said. It was just an authentic cry of the heart of this man, this shepherd. It was a doorway into mercy, especially for those who felt far from the church. The pontiff's response to the press aboard his aircraft, Shepherd 1, related to the sexual orientation of gay priests while taking into account their Christian devotion. Murrell also recalled to mourners a scene from March 27, 2020, in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Pope Francis is standing alone in a rainy, dark St. Peter's Square, totally empty, except for himself and maybe the cameraman, Muir said, a kind of active, silent benediction over the whole world, which was so wrapped in fear. He added to the imagery, "It just said, even in the midst of the storm, God is with us. Have hope." Walking up the steps to the Basilica, 44-year-old Phoenix resident Adriana Rangel said she was there to give thanks to God for all the legacy that he left us. Obviously, for all of us who are Catholic, it hurts. The Requiem drew 700 people to the church, said Brett Meister, spokesperson for the Roman Catholic Diocese of Phoenix. The 20-minute prayer service from the day before brought out an estimated 200 to the historic church on 3rd and Monroe Streets, he added. Leadership from different Christian denominations, including from the Episcopal, Lutheran, and Methodist faiths, were on hand for the Requiem. "I'm here in particular to show my appreciation for his important legacy of advocating for the rights of the marginalized," said United Methodist Reverend Rachel Gilmore, 43, as she briskly walked into the church. Muir himself was approached by a rabbi at the church as the Jewish faith leader wept over the loss of Pope Francis. Born Jorge Mario Bergoglio, the Argentine was the first Latin American and the first Jesuit to lead the Holy Roman Catholic Church. He was elected the 266th Pope on March 13, 2013. The late pontiff succeeded Pope Benedict XVI. Citing his mental and physical strength, Pope Benedict surprised the world by resigning, the first pontiff to do so in nearly 600 years. Pope Emeritus Benedict died December 31, 2022, at 95. Pope Francis has been in repose at St. Peter's Basilica since the day of his death. He will be interred April 26th at Rome's Basilica of St. Mary Major in a tomb simply marked Franciscus, as he had requested. The next article is titled, "Decide Our Own Future. Santan Valley Residents Pass Key Incorporation Milestone," by Maritza Dominguez, Arizona Republic. The members of the Santan Valley Incorporation Committee rolled out 10 locked black cases filled with signature paperwork into the lobby of Pinal County's elections office, marking its next steps to become a town on Tuesday. A group of Santan Valley residents submitted more than 10,500 signatures, vying to make the unincorporated county island into a municipality. The group was required to file at least 6,107 signatures, according to Garrett Glover, the county's filing officer. Deborah Grett has lived in the Johnson Ranch neighborhood for 25 years and has seen how the community has exploded. She said she was excited to get to Tuesday's milestone so that voters get to choose incorporation. "Then we'll get to take control and decide our own future," Grett said. Although it wasn't official on Tuesday whether the effort would get on the ballot, Grett remained optimistic and excited. Santan Valley's incorporation area encompasses approximately 34.6 square miles. The area has nearly 100,000 residents. In 2018, the county projected the area's population, including areas not within the proposed town boundaries, could reach about 310,000, fully built out. The effort is a turning point for the community that has been in the works for nearly 15 years. Dana Lewis, the county's election recorder, stated it could take about a week to review the petition sheets, and after which the recorder's office will do signature verification for 5% of the petitions. The Pinal County Board of Supervisors will then have to officially call the election for August 5th. Lewis said this is the state's largest incorporation effort ever. Previously, the largest known incorporation effort was in 1978, when Lake Havasu became a city with about 15,000 residents. By comparison, Santan Valley has over an estimated 100,000 residents. The city of Maricopa in Pinal County was the last place to incorporate the area in 2003, and at the time had just over 1,000 and didn't need to go to an election because the community gathered support from more than two-thirds of the total population. The Santan Valley incorporation efforts were supported by various other neighboring communities at Tuesday's event. Queen Creek Town Council member Jeff Brown was in Florence to support the Santan Valley Incorporation Committee, along with board member Mike Goodman and Gilbert Council member Bobby Bucci. Brown also told the Arizona Republic both communities have significant issues that impact both communities, such as transportation. The idea of having a partner to be able to lobby at the state legislature for additional transportation projects and road construction projects is crucial, Brown said. He said it's critical to have Santan Valley be that regional partner to go and approach the legislature about very relational issues. Butch Lee said Gilbert is there to support Santan Valley if it were to incorporate, as people there begin to develop the town's government. Goodman is the only board member who lives in Santan Valley and has supported their efforts from the beginning. Santan Valley, although it is an unincorporated area, is the most populous area in Pinal County, which is the size of Connecticut, Goodman said. He said this effort will help stop the town from retail leakage going into Maricopa County, add park amenities, and address the lack of fire protection. Goodman said that in Santan Valley, residents must subscribe and pay for fire service. Only 33% actually have fire protection because they pay for it, so that's another gap that needs to be filled, Goodman said. For Goodman, the answer to those problems is incorporation. The need to take control of their own destiny and not leave it to 5 board members and only one of them lives in the area, he said. What's next for the Santan Valley Incorporation Drive? The Incorporation Committee will now shift its focus towards getting the word out to residents about the election once the Board of Supervisors calls the election. Tyler Hudgens, the chairman of the committee, told the Republic that his next steps are to not slow down, to pick up speed and get this thing done. Hudgens noted this is the furthest a Santan Valley incorporation has gotten. Other efforts in the past have been stopped by outside interests, he said. There will be a brief period where individuals or groups can file a challenge questioning the validity of signatures and remove the effort from the ballot. There have been individuals who've stated they may challenge the signatures, Hudgens said, but that he is confident what the group turned in Tuesday would sustain a challenge. We want 7 representatives who all live here, who all know this area and advocate for this area, he said. The next article is titled, I Forgive You. It's been almost 5 years since Anaya Walker was killed in hit and run, by Lauren DeYoung, Arizona Republic. Anaya Walker would have turned 21 on April 21st, her golden birthday. Instead of celebrating, her mother donned a jacket and headed to her daughter's final resting place at Tempe Double Butte Cemetery. Face wet with tears, she addressed the media, pleading with the public to help find her daughter's killer. We want answers, Sharika Rimes, Walker's mother, said, wiping tears from her face. I'm a mother that had to bury my daughter at 16. Walker was reported missing from Mesa in December 2019. Her disfigured body was found abandoned 5 months later on an Interstate 10 median in Buckeye. Authorities determined her injuries indicated she was hit by a car. May 22nd will mark 5 years since Walker's death. Still, questions surround how she ended up on the median and who killed her. What I do know is that my daughter had a lot of common sense, Rimes said. She knew better than to be on a busy expressway, so there had to be a reason. Police said analysis of car parts left at the scene identified the vehicle as either a 2016 or 2018 Honda Civic LX or LE with midnight burgundy pearl as the vehicle's factory color, a color investigator said was unique. Someone that's watching this segment will remember something about that day, said Detective Mike Fisher of Silent Witness. He urged anyone from the area, including body shops or car dealerships, to come forward with any information. He mentioned the car would have had a mirror missing and damage to parts of its front bumper. He did not specify which mirror. Walker lived a turbulent life. She had been sex trafficked before she turned 14. She was in and out of group homes for behavioral issues that her mother believed stemmed from bullying. The last time Rimes spoke to her daughter was over the phone while Walker was at a behavioral center. They talked about her plans to go into the medical field and her interest in becoming a phlebotomist, Rimes said. The day she went missing, police said she ran away from a Mesa roller skating rink. She had been living at a group home in Scottsdale at the time. Investigators believed Walker may have been sex trafficked before her death. Buckeye Police and Silent Witness offered a $12,000 reward for information leading to an arrest in the case. Investigators asked anyone with information to call Silent Witness at 480-WITNESS or 480-TESTIGO for Spanish. Those who provide tips to Silent Witness remain anonymous. As the 5th anniversary of Walker's death draws near, Walker's family just wants closure. Rimes addressed the person responsible, her voice cracking. I want to say to you, I forgive you already, she said, gasping between sobs. You're the only one who can tell me what happened. You're the only one who can tell us and give us certain answers about that day. We move on to USA Today with an article titled, Poll. Trump loses trust on the economy as 100-day mark nears, by Susan Page, USA Today. Most Americans now express little or no confidence in how President Donald Trump is handling the economy, a Pew Research Center survey shows, a vulnerability in an area that has long been a source of his political strength. As Trump approaches the 100-day marker of his second term, nearly 6 in 10 disapprove of the tariffs he has imposed, while their predictions about what's ahead in the economy have darkened. The findings underscore the challenges for the president as he pursues sweeping and fundamental change, from reshaping the federal government to transforming the global trading system. While he retains the solid backing of his core supporters, the survey signals that he has not yet persuaded most Americans that he is on the right course. The poll of 3,589 U.S. adults by the nonpartisan think tank was taken online and by phone from April 7th to April 13th, a tumultuous moment in the tariffs debate. It has a margin of error of plus or minus 1.8 percentage points. Among those surveyed, 40% approved of the overall job he is doing as president, 59% disapproved. That's a decline of 7 percentage points since February, reflecting some erosion among the swing voters crucial to his victory in last November's election. His strong supporters remained unshakable at 96% approval. But among Trump supporters who supported him less strongly, approval has declined to 75% from 88%, down 13 points in 2 months. In most modern presidential campaigns, concerns about the economy, inflation, jobs, growth, have been the dominant issue. That includes 2024, when Trump hammered the Biden administration for not doing enough to control rising costs. Trump was favored over Biden and over 2024 Democratic nominee Kamala Harris for his ability to handle the economy. Since the election, though, Trump has lost some of that trust. Last November, Americans, by a margin of 59% to 40%, said they were very or somewhat confident about Trump's ability to make good decisions about economic policy. In the new poll, that assessment has flipped. Now 54% they have little or no confidence in his handling of the economy, while 45% are confident, a huge swing from a net 19-point approval to 9-point disapproval. Investors have demonstrated their nervousness about the economy with a roller coaster stock market. All that may have contributed to Trump's recent moves to modify his rhetoric and attempt to smooth some economic waters. He has set a 90-day pause on some of the steepest tariffs, entered into negotiations with China and other nations, and declared on Tuesday that he didn't plan to try to fire Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, as he had suggested he might. The traditional 100-day marker, a measurement dating to President Franklin Roosevelt's first term, isn't a reliable indicator of how an administration will eventually fare. It often fails before the defining events of an administration, such as the 9/11 attacks, which happened nearly 8 months into George W. Bush's first term, and the coronavirus pandemic, which hit in the third year of Trump's first term. But the 100-day mark does offer an early check on how Americans think the new president is doing, and an indication of whether he has expanded the coalition that elected him or lost ground. In this poll, Trump's troubles don't seem to have provided a boost for Democrats. More Americans now have a favorable view of the Republican Party, at 43%, than the Democratic Party, at 38%. That's a change from recent years and a critique that extends to the party's own members. Just 75% of Democrats now have a favorable view of their party. Asked to describe what they liked most about the new administration's actions, 30% of those surveyed replied, nothing. Another 20% mentioned immigration actions, including deportations and border security. Asked to describe what they liked least about the administration, 22% of the responses centered on how Trump governs, volunteering that he acted in an authoritarian manner, cared only about himself, or ignored the courts. The imperative for the White House to obey federal court decisions was one of the few areas in which Republicans and Democrats generally agreed. Two-thirds of Republicans, 65%, and nearly all Democrats, 91%, said the Trump administration would need to stop an action if a federal court ruled it illegal. Those numbers rose to 82% among Republicans and 95% among Democrats if the ruling came from the Supreme Court. Still, that means nearly a third of Republicans, 30%, said the White House didn't need to follow a federal court ruling, and 14% said it could ignore a decision even if it came from the High Court. On a list of 10 major issues, from the economy to foreign policy to health care, a majority of Americans said they lacked confidence in Trump's judgment on all 10 of them. The president's strongest rating was on immigration, with 48% expressing a fair amount of confidence, 52% not much. Trump earned his lowest rating for his ability to bring the country together. By a 2-to-1, 67% to 33%, those surveyed expressed little confidence in his ability to unite Americans. The next article is titled, Michelle Obama Breaks Silence on Skipping Trump's Second Inauguration, by Jay Stahl, USA Today. Michelle Obama is done going high for other people. The former First Lady spoke for the first time about skipping President Donald Trump's second inauguration on the April 23rd episode of her IMO with Michelle Obama and Craig Robinson podcast, which she co-hosts with her brother. During a conversation with the former collegiate basketball coach and Oscar nominee Taraji P. Henson, the Becoming author again addressed her viral rumors that she was divorcing former President Barack Obama by skipping the inaugural ceremony. My decision to skip the inauguration, or my decision to make choices at the beginning of this year that suited me, were met with such ridicule and criticism, Obama explained during the episode. People couldn't believe that I was saying no for any other reason. They had to assume that my marriage was falling apart. The comments were made in reference to viral rumors she was divorcing the former president. I'm here really trying to own my life and intentionally practice making the choice that was right for me, and it took everything in my power to not do the thing that was right or was perceived as right, but do the things that was right for me, she added on IMO. The Becoming on Netflix star said she had to basically trick herself into skipping the inauguration by making sure she would have nothing to wear to the ceremony. It started with not having anything to wear, she said. I was like, if I'm not going to do this thing, I gotta tell my team. I don't even want to have a dress ready, right? Because it's so easy to just say, let me do the right thing. Since leaving life in the White House behind, Michelle has reevaluated her approach to handling public situations, revealing that therapy has helped her skip events like Trump's inauguration and former President Jimmy Carter's funeral on January 9th. We made it through. We got out alive. I hope we made the country proud. My girls, thank God, are whole, Obama told Henson and Robinson. But what happened to me? And going through therapy is getting me to look at the fact that maybe finally I'm good enough. The voting rights advocate said she is trying to actively practice saying no to rewire the neurons in my head that made me keep pushing and keep striving. Obama said attending events solo, or the former president attending without her, helped reinforce her newfound method of saying no during a discussion with Henson about the pressures of being famous black women. It's a muscle that you have to build, she said of her mindset. And I think we suffered because it's almost like we started training late in life to build that muscle, right? I am just now starting to build it. The mom to Malia, 26, and Sasha, 23, said she wants our daughters, I want the young women out there, I want my girls to start practicing different strategies for saying no. She added, after all that I've done in this world, if I am still showing them that I have to show people that I love my country, that I'm doing the right thing, that I am always going high all the time, even in the face of a lot of hypocrisy and contradiction, all I'm doing is keeping that crazy bar that our mothers and grandmothers set for us. This year, the former First Lady has emerged as outspoken as ever since leaving the White House in 2017. She recently dismissed rumors that she and her A Promised Land author husband are heading toward divorce during an early April interview with Sophia Bush. While speaking on the Work in Progress podcast hosted by the actress, the former First Lady discussed having the freedom to pursue and decline different opportunities since leaving the White House. She said, whenever she makes a choice for myself, people are quick to assume her marriage is over. We as women, I think we struggle with disappointing people, she told the One Tree Hill alum. They couldn't even fathom that I was making a choice for myself, that they had to assume that my husband and I are divorcing, that this couldn't be a grown woman just making a set of decisions herself. But that's what society does to us. On Valentine's Day, she threw lightly veiled shade at critics of the A-list duo's marriage, captioning an Instagram selfie of the pair. If there's one person I can always count on, it's you, Barack Obama. You're my rock. Always have been, always will be. Happy Valentine's Day, honey. The next article is titled, Woman Dragged Out of Idaho Town Hall Asks for $5 million in Damages, Six Men Charged, by Kinsey Crowley, USA Today. Six men have been criminally charged in Idaho after an altercation at a Republican town hall ended in a woman being forcibly removed. The Coeur d'Alene City Attorney's Office confirmed with USA Today on April 21st that it filed charges on April 16th against five people working with the security firm and another attendee over their roles in the February 22nd incident. The arrest came after town halls across the country had become heated, as constituents from both parties expressed concern over President Donald Trump's swift and far-reaching staffing cuts. House Republicans were even advised to stop hosting town halls on account of the angry crowds. Police reports indicate Teresa Monoran Pohl had yelled out at an event hosted by Kootenai County Republican Central Committee at the Coeur d'Alene High School several times before she was approached and asked to leave. She told the Idaho Capital Sun she was expressing displeasure at the meeting and screamed, admittedly out of turn, right before the incident occurred. On April 21st, Boren Pohl filed a notice of a tort claiming seeking $5 million in damages against several people involved in the incident. Town halls are intended to foster conversation and discourse across the aisle, which is why I am deeply alarmed that private security dragged me out of the public meeting for simply exercising my fundamental right of free speech, Boren Pohl said in a statement announcing the claim. A police report outlines a video of an interaction at the center of the charges taken by Laura Tennyson. Here's what the detective reported seeing. A man approaches Boren Pohl, who is sitting several seats into a row of the auditorium, asking her to get up or be arrested. Although the video shows she is wearing jeans, a black jacket, and a cap, the report identified him as Sheriff Bob Norris of Kootenai County, where Coeur d'Alene is located. The sheriff's office did not comment on Norris' actions, but confirmed with USA Today that there were no other personnel present at the event. Norris asks her multiple times to leave before grabbing her arm and pulling on her arm, as she says several times, "Please don't touch me." "You want pepper spray?" he asks. Norris steps out of the aisle and appears to direct two other men in, though no explicit order could be heard. Those two men begin trying to remove Boren Pohl. She screams at Norris, asking him to confirm if they are deputies, to which he doesn't answer. Two men, also in plain clothes without markers, indicated they were security, take Boren Pohl by the arms and another by the feet. She ends up laying in the aisle on her stomach with one of the men kneeling over her back and another man standing nearby with zip ties for handcuffs. Eventually, they drag her up the aisle by her arms. At one point, her shirt comes up, exposing her midsection and bra, the report states. Boren Pohl also admitted to biting one of the men during the struggle and was cited for battery, a police report states. Police reports and the host of the event, Kootenai County Republican Central Committee, identified several of the suspects involved in removing Boren Pohl as members of a private security firm, Lear Asset Management. According to a statement from the KCRCC, a few days after the incident, Lear volunteered security services without a contract, as they were unarmed. The organization also said the event was private, and attendees were warned that disruptors would be asked to leave. And this is all the time we have for this hour of the Arizona Republic. I'm your broadcast volunteer, Neil Kelly. Stay tuned for the second hour of the Arizona Republic on Sun Sounds of Arizona.